All right. Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, hello. Welcome. This is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This is a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. Here we examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads us to this end. Thus go we. Everybody that's on the panel tonight. Shalom, peace and blessings. Of course, this is your humble host, Eric Thekifer, coming to you live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We're here every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And we are broadcasting in three different broadcasting. Live streaming in three different locations. We're live casting on the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group Facebook page, the Dr. Eric Smith Facebook page, and also the Cross and the Crescent YouTube channel. Remember, a Kafir is someone who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam. Thus, this is where we get the name Radio Free Kafiristan, Eric the Kafir. It is a name, and it's a pejorative name used by usually some of the most devout practitioners of Islam towards people who are not Muslims themselves. We are going to, let me see here. Okay, the call-in number, if you want to call in tonight, the call-in number is area code 319-527-6706, area code 319-527-6706. If you are watching on YouTube and you want to come on to the show, go ahead and post a comment in the chat on the YouTube live stream, and I will try to figure out how to send you a link, whether it's through email, Facebook Messenger, or some way. We'll get it figured out. All right, so tonight we're going to be discussing BDS. And I know it's just kind of a couple letters thrown together, but what does this actually mean? BDS is a movement, unfortunately, that is designed to destroy the nation of Israel. It stands for boycott, divest, and sanction. So as you can see, it is mainly a economic movement to try to cripple Israel economically. Israel has essentially won its security through military force. It's won every war, fortunately, that it is engaged in, has thrown at them, and it has won also the political war in the UN and being designated and recognized as a legitimate country. And now the only way to try to delegitimize them and to try to destroy Israel itself is to try to cripple the country economically. And unfortunately, it's not working out very well for the Palestinian cause, those who are trying to push the movement. We see a lot of it on college campuses today. As a matter of fact, there's a website that if you go to, I don't know if I have this up here. Right away, excuse me, I do not have it up, provides instructions, information to college campuses where BDS movements are said to be coming and holding their protest and throwing out all of their lies and innuendo about Israel. And what really worries me about this movement itself is the way that they want to control the language. When we look at how Islam itself today is given this, and I call it an affirmative action plan for a religion, to where you have to protect it. It has to receive some type of governmental protection so it's not criticized, because if it was criticized in the open arena of ideas, it would be completely destroyed, because you could destroy it historically, theologically, and also moral as a moral precept. That's done pretty easily. So what you have to do is you have to pretty much criticize anybody or demonize, let me put it that term, demonize anybody that would dare to provide some type of constructive criticism of it. You have to call them, oh, I don't know, hate preachers, racist bigots. But the key term that they use is, who can tell me? Type in a chat first. too late, Islamophobe. You have, you're called an Islamophobe. Now, of course, we don't have any other religions out there sharing in this same type of protection, a distinguished phobia. We don't have Christophobes. We don't have Hindiphobes. We don't have Buddhaphobes. We don't have Judaphobes. We don't have any of these other phobes. The only phobe that you can have out there is Islamophobia. You can only be declared somebody who hates a religion or somebody that has some type of irrational hatred or disagreement with a religion when it comes to Islam. No other religion can have that type of status. So when this guy points out, or just about everybody else on this panel, well, everybody else on this panel for that matter, points out some of the shortcomings of Muhammad, his life. You know, he had people murdered. I don't know. If you have somebody people murdered, you know, what does that make you? You know, if you, and I get it. You know, if you,
murderer.
There you go. Thank you, Connie. It makes you a murderer. If you have somebody murdered, and not just murdered, you know, if somebody, let's say somebody, you know, kills a family member. Well, you hire somebody to go kill that guy. Well, okay. But if you hire somebody or you get somebody to go kill another person for simply criticizing you, that's pretty pathetic. And that's exactly what Muhammad did. But by saying that, that makes this guy some type of an Islamophobe. So what is being done is it's an attempt to control the language, to control the mantra, or to control the narrative here. And what?
The reason they have no truth, and because they have no truth, they must quash freedom of speech. And this is what happened with Muhammad. There were valid reasons to criticize him, and he wanted to silence his critics. The other quick point I'd like to make when it comes down to this issue of Islamophobia is we need to bear in mind at all times, my friends, we need to bear in mind at all times that these countries subscribe to a different human rights code than the rest of the world.
Right.
And why is that? Because they want to have the right to discriminate against anyone who does not agree with their ideology.
Yeah, I see this, you know, in my own personal experiences with they not only want to squash you, they want to try to completely destroy you, as a matter of fact. They want to destroy you economically. They want to destroy you socially, slander your name, and call you everything in the book using these basic terminologies. But the thing with this BDS movement that I was getting to is, like I said, is controlling the narrative and controlling the language. And there's a term that they're using now that they are getting somewhat successful with, and they're calling Israel an apartheid state. Now, we all know where this term apartheid come from. At least most of us, I don't know. Maybe Issa. Well, Issa, I would think Issa would be old enough to know where this came from. Consider this DVD a BDS. Yeah, this was when South Africa, which was a former British colony, had established a colony down there, and then they were no longer a colony. They formed their own nation, South Africa. The white minority, and when I talk about a minority, I'm talking about a teeny tiny minority compared to the indigenous populations down there, ruled over the majority. They denied citizenship rights, due process, all kinds of rights that would be due to citizens of a country. And the reason why they did this is because they wanted to hold on to power. Well, people realized how wrong this was for this small, tiny minority in South Africa to own all the property. Basically, I don't want to say enslave, but pay, you know, poverty level wages to the majority in the country itself. People recognized that this was just wrong, and so other nations got together they did was is they sanctioned the country of South Africa. And this is where South Africa started slowly at first starting to give in some of these sanctions, some of these boycotts that were going in, the divestment of money into South Africa. So what did they do? Well, they released Nelson Mandela from jail, thinking that, well, okay, if we release Nelson Mandela from jail, that should get everybody off of our back. What? Somebody talking? Chris's mic is hot. I'm going to mute you real quick. There we go. So when they released Nelson Mandela, well, that was basically letting the cat out of the bag. Just as soon as you release Nelson Mandela, he's this national hero because he'd been thrown into prison for fighting, trying to fight this apartheid state. And now he's finally out. And the entire economy crumbled. The entire government crumbled. And Nelson Mandela becomes president. The rest is what we would call history. And it was successful. The world boycotted, divested, and sanctioned South Africa. Why? Because they were truly an apartheid state. So now what's happening now is with this BDS movement, what we see happening here is they're trying to associate this, make the same association between the nation of Israel with South Africa. They're trying to say that Israel itself is an apartheid state. It discriminates against a minority in their country, which isn't true. You know, let the facts ever get in the way. But what they have admitted is that now what they're doing is they are evolving this definition of apartheid. Well, people don't realize that they are indeed evolving and misapplying this definition of apartheid because it's like calling somebody a Nazi and saying, you're nothing but a Nazi. And then you have to defend yourself against not being a Nazi and all those, you know, stigmas that come along with it. Now, see, this is what they're trying to do to Israel because they are changing the definition of what apartheid is, applying it to Israel, and then trying to justify this boycotting, divesting, and sanctioning. And they are having some – I would say that they are having some success, some limited success, but it has to be through the efforts of people who are, you know, to be number one, to be educated about this, but we need to be vigilant in constantly defending Israel against this attempt to boycott, divest, and sanction them because other nations saying, well, they're in an occupied, and this is another term they use, occupied territory. Well, what territory is occupied? Is the Gaza Strip occupied anymore? No. The Gaza Strip isn't occupied anymore by Israel. Israel said, okay, you want to, you know, rule yourself here. We'll give you full autonomy there in the Gaza Strip. You can rule yourselves, elect your own leaders. And what did they do? The first thing they did is they elected a terrorist organization to rule over them. They elected Hamas. Well, that really worked out well for them. What does Hamas do? Well, they, you know, indiscriminately fire rockets into Israel. According to some people, so they need to protect themselves. From what? They have their own – they have an autonomous state there. And then the other region, which people call the West Bank, Israel calls Judea and Samaria. History calls Judea and Samaria. And the only reason why they call it the West Bank is because Jordan illegally occupied it after Israel declared its independence in 1948. That's the only reason why they call it the West Bank. It's not called the West Bank. It's called Judea and Samaria. And there they share the land with the Palestinians. But anytime that is Israeli builds a house on that land, they call it – what do they call that when they build a house? There they call it settlements. There you go. They call it settlements when it's not a settlement. So anyway, this attempt to boycott – Israel is an attempt to destroy Israel. I have, let me share my screen here. I have several articles. Oh, wait a second. Let me do this. I have several articles that I want to just kind of briefly pop up on the screen for everybody to take a look at. The guy, and I was instructed by Steve, and he was right on this. The guy that runs this organization, Steve, can you come up on mic? I'm sorry for bothering. You're probably over in the kitchen cooking where you have really good Wi-Fi.
I can hear
you. Okay. Can you tell us who this Omar Barghouti guy is?
It's Barghouti.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, I don't know specifically this guy, but I know that the family, the Barghouti family, they're the guy named Mustafa. Obaruhuti, who is he's a big hero, and he's in an Israeli prison right now because he killed 5 people in a hotel in Jerusalem in 2002. And but he's a very popular figure. If they were to let him out of jail, he would be the next president.
Really?
He is so popular. His name is Mustafa Barakulti. Oh, no, excuse me, Marwan Barakulti.
Okay.
They're very famous. It's a very big famous family. So anyway, so this guy is a member of that family.
Okay, and who is his son? No, you were telling me. You're telling me the guy that killed these 5 Israelis is the father of this Omar Barhouti, who actually runs the BDS movement today.
Oh, you know what? I'm not sure about that.
I will tell you this. I did do the penance for the show. I took one for the team yesterday and the day before, and I listened to an interview that this Barhouti guy did with like NPR, some leftist organization, and he admitted during that interview that his dad was a member of the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization. So
the Barakulti family is very powerful. They're very influential. You know, there's Mustafa, who was a member of the Palestinian Authority, and also Marwan Barakulti was the one who's in jail. He wasn't really a member of the government, but he was a member of like a fringe group that was part of the government. You know, it was kind of an extremist group. I think it was called the I'll look it up because
okay, well, Rad just posted something in the chat there. Rad, what is that? Can you come up on mic and tell us what that is you just posted in the chat?
It's jihadi porn. No, it's a wiki page on the Burundi guy that you're talking about, the founder of the BDS movement.
Okay, so, all right, well, okay, but anyway, this guy's running BDS today. Let's just put it this way. And when we look at what he has to say, here's what the goal is. His whole goal is this right of return. This is their demand. We will stop this boycotting, this divestment, this sanctioning, if you allow the Palestinians the right to return to their land. Now, what would that mean, though? I mean, if you just sit down and think about that just for a second, if you would indeed give the Palestinians, and I use this term Palestinian very loosely here because it helps the conversation go along. You know, we could sit here and argue for an hour who and what a Palestinian really is. But if you allow the Palestinians who are in the Gaza Strip and the Palestinians that the West Bank, Samaria and Judea, and in the Golan Heights, the right to return to Israel, the Jewish people would immediately become a minority in their own country. Now, the Palestinians that do live in Israel today, they do enjoy all the rights that the Israeli citizens have. They have the right to vote. They have members of Muslim Palestinian members in the Knesset, in the parliament, in their government. They even have a Palestinian who is on the Supreme Court, if I'm not mistaken. So they do have full participation in society. So to make this categorization of Israel as an apartheid state is completely erroneous. And the goal is that slide I just showed you is to have the right of return. And the founder, the co-founder, I guess he's a co-founder of this, is who it is, Omar Barhouti, okay, co-founder of the Boycott Devote, okay, said in a May 21 interview that the Palestinian right to return would end Israel as a Jewish state. So he even admits this, that by giving in to the demand of the BDS movement, which would be full right of return for the Palestinian people, that it would end the Jewish state. That is his goal. His goal is to destroy the state of Israel. Here's a video. He's speaking. I'm not sure. I wish. Well, Steve can translate for us. Steve, listen to this video and. Okay, listen to the video and tell us what this guy is saying. If it's Arabic, I don't know. He's sprecking some language that I'm not aware of. Here we go.
right. And at the other end, كما تضارب في الصنادق قطع ماذا تبقى من النظام الصهيوني القائم؟ لن تبقى دولة صهيونية أبعد عنها، وستصبح الأقلية الفلسطينية أغلبية فلسطينية في الدولة المسمى حاليا الصهيونية.
Is that, were the subtitles correct? Oops.
He said, I think it's pretty clear there, you know, what he said.
Okay, the subtitles were correct?
Yeah, he's saying that there would be a one nation, and the majority would be, of course, Palestinians, because this would include the return of the Palestinians now in Lebanon, in Syria, and in Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's a, you know, it would just be biracial, but one state biracial, you know, a Palestinian state.
Okay. Now, what I'm wondering, if somebody can come up here and comment on this, what exactly do you think would happen to the Jews living in Israel if the Palestinians ever became a majority in the country of Israel?
They would pulverize them. No mercy. Because they would be backed up by Iran and everybody that hates Israel.
Okay.
Well, Hamas, you know, in the Gaza Strip, if you see that what if you bring Hamas into the equation, which Hamas is very popular right now because of what happened recently in Gaza, you know, that made Hamas very popular because they survived. You know, a lot with these guys, winning isn't necessarily the goal. The goal is just surviving. You just survive. Hamas did survive. You're the hero. And so if those guys, you know, are part of the government, and then you bring in the Islamic element of the deen,
right.
There is a very thin hadith. It's a very, everybody knows. And it's a hadith about the Jew behind the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that Jesus isn't going to come back until, you know, what happens is that the Muslims are going to fight the Jews. And then when there's a Jew behind the tree is going to say, hey, Muslim, there's a Jew behind me. Come kill him. Or a rock. A rock will also speak and say, there's a Jew behind me. Come kill him. This is in the religion. And this is an expectation. This is Islamic. What's the word?
Supremacism? Oh, eschatology, sure. Okay, yeah.
Yep, my ex-husband told me that a long time ago, too. Oh, this was a long time ago, but yeah, they know this. This is in their psyche to say things like that and to believe it.
Okay, so go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
No, I just said it.
Okay. And Connie, I think you're spot on. This is in their sight. This is what they're taught. This is something that's embedded within their religion. How many Jews live in the Gaza Strip today, Steve? Do you have any idea?
Zero. I was there, by the way, when they moved out. So I lived there when they moved out in 2005.
Why did they move out?
But no, wait, hold on. Okay, well, but I mean, it's been 16 years since complete control, autonomy has been handed over to the Palestinians in Gaza. Surely they would be able to be recognizing the rights the same way in which the Israelis recognize the rights that live in Israel. You're saying that the people, the government in the Gaza Strip does not recognize rights or doesn't even allow Jews in their country?
Yeah, how did they leave, Steve? What, were they forced out?
No, I remember when the Jews, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Steve.
There was an agreement between George Bush and Ariel Sharon at the time. And Ariel Sharon is the one who took the Jews out. There were 8,000 Israeli settlers in the Gaza Strip at the time. And they controlled like about a fourth of the Gaza Strip. And so, but they just got up and left just because Israel said it cost too much to guarantee security for them in the Gaza Strip, you know. And so
but then we turn around and secure them in Israel. That's what Eric was saying. We turn around and Israel turns around and secures Palestinians living in Israel, but they won't do it in the land that we gave them, right?
Well, you know, what happened before they left, you know, I used to always take the bus. I used to take a bus from Jerusalem to Gaza because my father lived in the West Bank, and so I would have to drive, you know, take a bus back to the Gaza Strip because I was working in the Gaza Strip and I'm living there. And in Ashkelon, before they pulled the Jews out of the Gaza Strip, in Ashkelon, there were posters everywhere. In Ashkelon is right next to the Gaza Strip. And the posters were, get ready for the rockets. They were saying, get ready for the rockets, meaning that when the Jews left the Gaza Strip, rockets were going to start flying into Israel. That was exactly what happened. Mm-hmm.
So in other words, when Israel, and this is one of the key reasons why Israel is so apprehensive of continuing to try to negotiate this two-state solution or anything close to it, is because anytime that they give this land for peace, it's always in the favor of the Palestinians and never in the security interests of the Israelis, because you're exactly right. I remember sitting there watching them, dragging them people, screaming and crying out of their homes across into Israel out of the Gaza Strip. And if let's say a Jew were to, I don't know, hop in a car, let's say they're Helen Keller, the Jew, and they're driving a car and they drive into the Gaza Strip, what would happen to that person?
They would be instantly kidnapped, possibly killed. And you know, I don't want to make this about me, but I will tell you that on the day that Mustafa Barghouti got arrested and put in jail, I was mistaken for an Israeli settler. They mistook me for an Israeli, because when I speak Arabic, I got an American accent. Lost, I asked people for directions. They said that I was an Israeli settler, and they chased me and shot my car 14 times with me in it because they thought I was an Israeli settler.
Didn't they also shoot your guitar too?
No, that was the Israelis, because they thought I was.
They shot your guitar. That's of course. I've seen him, Steve. Yeah.
But the point is, if someone got lost in there, God helps.
Yeah, and that's the point. That's precisely the point I'm trying to make. If the Palestinians ever became a majority in Israel, do you think that their treatment of the Jewish people would change any bit than the way that they treat them in the Gaza Strip? Do you think for a second that the Jewish people would enjoy any type of rights, none that they enjoy now in the Gaza Strip? They have no rights there now. But do you think for a second that there would have any type of rights if they were a minority in their own country?
Situation in Jerusalem when Jordan controlled, you know, were the Jews able to go to their holy sites? You know, were the Jews guaranteed equal protection in Jerusalem?
Oops.
I hate to say this, Islam, you guys, has a thing about the Jews. Muhammad had a problem with the Jews. And you know, in the United Nations, they're going to be saying, oh, we're not anti-Semitic, we're anti-Zionist. That's it. No. Islam has inbred anti-Semitism. I hate to say that. You know, I hate to say that.
But it's the truth, though. That's the problem. It's the truth, though. That is the absolute God-honest truth, is that it has that anti-Semitic tinge to it. And if and Christianity is not, you know, isn't like it's clean of all this anti-Semitism either. If you look at some of the pogroms of the Catholic Church, you look at Martin Luther, for crying out loud, grew in to be a huge anti-Semite in his later years. Why? Because the Jews would not accept Christianity outside of, he thought, you know, that he would preach a purified Christianity, one that isn't weighed down by the dogma of the Catholic Church, that the Jews would accept it. Well, they didn't, so he just like Muhammad, became very angry at the Jews and turned on them and had all this vitriol that we see. So, you know, and that's the point that I'm trying to make. So if the BDS movement is to destroy the state of Israel, and the way to do it, they know that the way to do it is with the right of return. So if you can force Israel into negotiating the right of return in which if you, they return all of these people who supposedly were Palestinians and indigenous to the land at the time and absorb them into Israel, well, the Jews become a minority in their own country. The next government that's set up, they have no power. They're not going to be able to do anything. And any and every law and restriction that can be passed upon them will be almost immediately. Control of the military apparatus will be taken away from them. God help us if the control of the nuclear arsenal that Israel has today ever fell into any hands from that organization. That would just be – that'd be almost like a frightening World War III is imminent now type scenario for that country. I wanted to play a video clip of the feelings of the Palestinians, Israel, and their willingness to negotiate with them. I've brought this up before, and I've mentioned what the results of this were, but what I wanted to do here is I want to play this so you all see for yourself firsthand what the Palestinian people, when asked whether or not they would share land with the Israelis, return to the pre-67 borders, and what their answers were. So let me just go ahead and put this up on the screen and hit play and mute myself.
Would there be peace?
Would there be peace?
If Israel left the West Bank and Gaza completely, would you agree?
Yeah.
Gaza became
Zionist.
Just you.
Yeah, I'm human. I'm a human being. So I don't have the God is merciful to me, but then...
So you accept it, you're saying?
I go out absolutely and never.
Okay, notice that last part that you said.
Yeah.
Go out. Yeah. So you're saying, you know, even when they do say, yeah, well, we'd accept peace, there's a condition on it. Like, the Israelis are going to leave. They have to leave.
And he's trying to give the question, well, if they say, I mean, early you know,
you live in Israel and you live
now
in Palestine.
If it turns around,
yeah.
So wait, they leave everything? They have to leave Tel Aviv, they have to leave Haifa. The only thing you'll make peace to the Israelis is leave Israel completely.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make any sense.
And yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to give you guys a dose of what these people said. That video, and there's several other videos that were videos with these interviews that were made, and it's unequivocal that these people will never, regardless of what type of negotiations go on, you know, the land for peace, returning to the pre-67 borders or anything of the like, it's not going to happen. You just cannot have a peace with the people that hate you so much that they want your eternal destruction. And it's written into their own scriptures, their own sources, their own Quran, their own Hadith, their own Sunnah. Right. And the Hamas, who is the governing body in the Gaza Strip today, it's written in their scripture or in their founding document that they believe in the destruction of Israel itself. So how do you make a peace with, you know, with the people whose initial premise is your destruction? Negotiate with them, Palestinians. You go negotiate with those people in Gaza, but they want us. They want to kill us. They want to destroy us. Well, you can negotiate. Well, even after we do negotiate, and you ask them, hey, if we give you, go back to the 67 borders, is there going to be peace? And they say, no, there's not going to be a peace until you're all gone. Where's the starting point with that?
And that won't end there. They'll be chasing them wherever they go.
Yeah, and you know, I agree. I think Trump had it right, and this is so discouraging is to see what Biden is doing here. Biden is undoing all of the gains that Trump had made by leveraging international pressure on the Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank or Judea and Samaria to come to the negotiation table by starving them out. But the problem is, here's another problem, is that this corruption is so embedded into the governments. The guy that's in charge of Fatah over in the West Bank. What's his name?
He's called Abu Mazen. He's Abu Mazen, he's the father of Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas.
There we go, Mahmoud Abbas, there you go. Now, he's in the 16th year of his four-year term as president. How do you start a negotiation with somebody who absolutely refuses to leave office and has enriched himself? He's a billionaire, for crying out loud.
These are the people that Israel wants this guy in because they can talk to him. You know, the rest of the guys, you know.
Well, you're definitely not talking to Hamas. You definitely can't do the Fatah movement. I agree. I get it, because the Fatah movement, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Steve, is that the Fatah movement is more of a secular movement versus what Hamas is. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, and it was Yasser Arafat, you know.
Exactly.
You know, the one thing about them is that they are secular and that they are much more open to the Christians, and you know, I think the reason Yasser Arafat was in power for so long is because he always stood with the Christians. His wife was even a Christian.
Oh, she was. Did she ever get any? Did she ever get that money that he those billions of dollars that he died with?
The billions, yes.
Yeah, I mean it's incredible. I mean it's crazy. These guys, they're siphoning off so much money. They become billionaires, and nobody's even. So you could say, hey, terrorism does pay.
You know the you know what happened is that there was an election in the Gaza Strip, and I was there, and the you know the Fatah guys, you know, my family's Fatah.
Are they?
But these guys were all driving these beautiful cars, sending their kids to school in France, you know, doing all the things when the people didn't have food. Where did they get all that money? How did they get all that money? And that's the reason why Hamas won the election in the Gaza Strip, you know, because they were just siphoning the money, and now it's much worse.
Well, we saw what they did to the members of the Fatah party when the Hamas holes came to power. Yeah, they were throwing them off buildings, shooting, you know, it was like a bloodbath.
I had just come out of church that night. I was coming out of church when they said, and my church was only a few blocks from the building that they threw the guy out.
Really?
And it was, you talk about terror. Dude, they terrified everybody.
How are Christians treated in Gaza today?
Today, you know, it's, you know, they're the, you know, the, what I could tell you, this gets very, very, it gets very painful for me because.
Well, I don't mean to press you on this. I'm just trying to get the general temperature. Do they recognize the religious rights of Christians in Gaza today? Do they give them full citizenship rights or no?
Well, yeah, you know that, but the Christians understand that they are a very small minority, and you know, Hamas wants to maintain the peace over there. There used to be like 3,000 Christians. There's 3 churches in the Gaza Strip, you know. And after Hamas took over, about half of the Christians left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one reason was because there was a friend of mine who was murdered brutally. And he worked at the Bible Society. And I'm not telling you something that this was in the New York Times. He worked at the Bible Society. He was the general manager. I used to work at the Bible Society. He was a friend of mine. We worked together. We used to do children's plays together. And he was brutally murdered for being a Christian, for refusing to convert.
Mm-hmm.
I read
an article on that. Didn't he have a couple kids that...
They had 2, and his wife was pregnant.
That's right. That's right.
His name was Rami Ayed. And it was a very big story when it came out. That was... I had left the Gaza Strip by then. I had been out of the Gaza Strip by about 5 months by that time. But you know what that did is it sent a chill through the Christian community, you know. But they stayed, you know, and most of them stayed, and they're still there, and they're being the light. Many of them are being the light. There was this really brave Catholic priest. His name is Musalla. This guy has a school in the Gaza Strip. In the midst of all of this terror, it was so scary. And Al Jazeera or some news station went and interviewed this Catholic priest because he had a big school. And he said, and they asked him, they said, aren't you scared to be here now? You know, they've broken some of the statues in his churches.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, they should be scared of me because their kids are in my school. And that's when I tell you what, man, I respected the Catholics after that, man, like never before, man. I said, look how this guy is standing up, but. Yeah, you know, Christians have—they do have a position there. They have their schools. There are Christian schools, and you know, Muslims send their kids to the Christian schools because they know how the Christians are good with kids. You know, and
they won't be molesting them. They know exactly what they're doing. They won't be molested
with the kids. You know, and so you know, praise the Lord. You know that the Christians are being the light in the midst of that darkness.
Yeah.
You know? And so I always commend them.
Well, I was looking at the...
Steve, what about Bethlehem?
I was just going to ask that, Rhett. I was just writing it down. You look at my notes right here. Yeah.
What about,
yeah.
What about it in the Christian population there? I heard that after, well, I heard that they fled pretty much back in the 2000s or something like that once people got under control.
It's been happening since 1948, you know, that the Christians have been leaving the Holy Land. And it used to be, Bethlehem used to be 80% Christian. Now it's 20% Christian,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, so and all of the Holy Land, like Ramallah used to be a Christian city for majority Christian. It's not anymore, you know. And so a lot of it is because of the refugee issues. But could I just say one thing about prophecy here in regard to like what Joe Biden is doing?
Say that again, Steve. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say that this is something, if you look at Ezekiel 38 and 39, there is a terrifying situation there where it says that Gog and Persia are coming to attack Israel. And it says in that prophecy that God rises up. That God rises up in Israel. And it says that the smoke comes before my nostrils. That's what God says. The smoke came into my nostrils and in my fury. And God rises up and defends Israel. And you know what? I don't know. I want to be very careful with what I say. But based on that, you know what I kind of think? Is that America, if you look at the prophecy, looks like it's standing on the sidelines talking but not doing anything. This is in Ezekiel. You know, a lot of people think that the cup of Tarshish is America. Well, if America becomes like that, you know, like a paper tiger that doesn't do nothing, you know what? I think that Israel right now still looks to America for its protection. But I think that what happens within the Ezekiel 38 is Israel is going to lift their eyes and they're going to look to God. And God is going to come and defend them. You know, I mean, I know I'm looking at a theological and stuff situation, but if you read Ezekiel 38 and 39, that's the impression I get, is that Israel is no longer looking at the nations for help. They're looking to God, and he comes and helps them. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
No, and we appreciate that, because, you know, sometimes you worry anytime you start talking about eschatology and, you know, are you going to step on somebody's toes? Is somebody going to start screaming and yelling at you about, you know, all those things? I when it comes to eschatology, I generally just take a neutral approach. And when you start citing those, okay, somebody needs to go and chat here. The sophisticated birdie person, just go ahead and boot that person. Just delete them. They're not doing anything productive there. Thank you. But what I was saying is that when you come to those chapters in Ezekiel, and plus you have all kinds of other chapters that you can do to support that. Because if you look at in the Bible, there's really no, you know, of course the United States is not going to be mentioned by name, because, you know, it was written 2,000 years ago. But at the same time, any type of description of it is not provided either at that time that these events happen. So I tend to agree with you on that. And if you disagree with me, shut your mouth. I'll put you in timeout.
Still walk in love. That's
right.
The greatest thing, is we can still walk in love.
Right. We don't have to worry about getting our heads cut off by each other. Or being charged with an apostasy or anything like. Okay, I wanted to show you a couple things about this BDS movement. I had I did a slideshow, and I've done this presentation I think maybe once here, or it was over in the Cross of the Crescent, I can't remember. And it was setting up a case for the nation of Israel and its legitimacy, its legitimate claim to the Holy Land. And one of the analogies that I want to draw a clear line here is most of these people were saying that Israel does not have a right to exist. They were not there prior to its establishment. Number one, it's not true. You had Jews immigrating into the land, and actually you had Jews living there for centuries, since the founding of Israel. You've had Jews in the land since that time. They've never been completely eradicated from the land. But you had a... What do you mean by that?
that Israel was there in the land since Joshua and Caleb. Right? From Moses? And
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm trying to, you know, Connie, okay, no. I hate it. There is a, listen, this is great. There is a live stream that is done by two guys called Joshua and Caleb. And they're Americans, and they live in Israel, and they do a live stream. It's like a news thing. They're called the Israel guys now, but their names are Joshua and Caleb. And I thought that's what you were talking about. I'm trying to think, what in the heck is this woman talking about, Joshua and Caleb? Okay, well, at the end of the show, remind me to do it, and I'll send it to you. It is a great channel. I you know, when I get up in the morning, I exercise, whatever. I always put them on the TV, and I listen to them. Okay, but what I wanted to do here is I wanted to show you a couple things about this BDS movement and some of the protests that they make. This is the protest that they have. Look what they do to this map here, and notice on the map that they're flying here, this flag that they're flying. Hold on, let me get my laser. I love my little laser pointer here. Okay, so if you look at this map right here, it says 1947, and this is supposed to be Palestine in 1947, which wasn't. This is a part of what they call the Transjordan, and it was just this section of what they called the Transjordan under the British Mandate. Well, after the British Mandate ended and Israel declared its independence in 1947, actually it was 48 is where they declared their independence, but here's how they partitioned it. Now, look how they partitioned this country. Now, for Pete's sake, they give them the Gaza Strip. The Egyptians wouldn't even take the Gaza Strip. Is John here? John's still here. I don't know. John, why didn't the Egyptians want the Gaza Strip? Do you know anything about this?
The United Nations, because at this time there was no state under the name Palestine, and the United Nations said Gaza Strip will belong to Egypt, and West Bank will belong to Jordan. And we as Egyptians control the Gaza Strip till 1967.
But why? Okay. Well, yeah. This, okay. I agree with you. But I mean, why didn't the Egyptians want to govern it prior to that, though? I mean, what was the problem?
We had a lot of problems last few years, especially after Hamas being in the governor place of Gaza Strip.
Okay.
Because they made a lot of tunnels. It is not tunnels between Gaza Strip and Israel. No, it's some of the
right.
some of the tunnels go to Sinai,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of weapons go from Hamas go to ISIS in Sinai. Many times the Egyptian president closed the border with Hamas or Gaza Strip. Close the border completely. No one goes from here to there or go to the other side for months. They open only for emergency. Someone needs to make a surgery in the Egyptian hospitals. They allow them to go. But it's like a closed border, and they watch the tunnels well. Then it's a lot of headache to control Gaza Strip again.
Okay, so in other words, let me see here. Let me do something here. Right. So in other words, even the Egyptians didn't want to try to rule over the people in Gaza because they were. Was that right?
I said to put it in a word, the Gazanians are completely nuts.
Right. That's the point that I was trying to make. I mean, these people are – even the Arab nations are turned – and this is why with the Abraham Accords that Trump was trying to strike up, these Arab nations are even realizing now that there's just no way. These people are so filled with hate that there is no way that Israel is ever going to be able to reach any type of peace agreement, regardless of what it does, other than just commit national suicide by allowing this right to return. And that's just never going to happen. Okay, so when we look at – somebody's the same? Yep.
Eric, I just want to say I know this is going into the prophecy again, but I just want to say that in Zechariah chapter 9, there is a prophecy about Gaza, and it says, Gaza will rise in pain, and the king shall fall from Gaza, but those who remain shall be my people, and they shall be among the princes of Judah. So there's a great prophecy about Gaza that they will be among the princes of Judah.
Well, how would that work, though? I mean, if you have people who are, you know, religiously and ethnically opposed to you.
God knows how.
Well, that's true. There you go. Exactly right, I guess. Just shut your mouth there, Kaffir. You got this. God's got this. Okay, so let's look at the...
Get in that corner.
Yeah, yeah. Sit down. That's right. Okay, so here you can see the partition of Israel after the end of the British Mandate. And then after the... Just as soon as Israel declared its independence, they were attacked by... I think it was 7 Islamic nations. I'm willing to be wrong on that number. I know it was at least 5. It was Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, Syria, Iraq. I'm not sure if Saudi Arabia got in on that gig. Maybe Morocco did. I think there were 7 nations. I'm willing to be wrong. If it wasn't 7, I apologize. But I'm pretty sure. And they still won. A country who has no official army, no official air force, doesn't have anything, no navy. They won against 7 invading nations. And when these invading countries came in, they were told the indigenous people that lived there, flee, get out of our way. We're going to push these Jews into the sea. And when we do, you can come take their land. Well, they didn't win. So these people, when they fled outside of Israel proper, they went into these, what we would have called these refugee camps now. And they were not allowed back in. Why? Because these people were actually what you would say, they were collaborating. And so at the end of the 67, or I'm sorry, the revolution, I wouldn't say the revolution, not the revolution, the War of Independence, there we go. This is what Israel looked like. So it does go from this, why? Because Israel's attacked and they kept the land that they seized after they were attacked from it. And according to the laws of international warfare, a country who is attacked by another country is allowed to seize that land that country attacked it from, from that country. So when we look at the 67 war, Jordan attacked Israel from the West Bank. So Israel has a legitimate right to the West Bank. Syria attacked Israel from the Golan Heights. So Israel has a right to seize the Golan Heights from Syria. Now, Israel, if you remember, after the 67 war, or at the beginning of the 67 war, Egypt had amassed all of their artillery and armor out here in the Sinai and caused Israel to essentially shut down their entire country to defend itself because they knew that Egypt was going to attack it. So to prevent this massive invasion from Egypt, to prevent that, they launched a preemptive attack on the Egyptian Air Force and decimated just about the entire Air Force within 2 hours, and which allowed them to again attack their from the air using their aerial assets to attack Egypt's armored assets and destroy Egypt. Well, Israel was able to take the entire Sinai Peninsula. But according to the laws of international war, Israel is not allowed technically to keep the Sinai Peninsula. Why? Because Israel preemptively attacked Egypt, even though Egypt was, you know, shutting down their ports, blockading their coast, being very aggressive there in the Sinai. Israel still did not have an international legitimate claim to that land, and this is what resulted in the Camp David Accords between Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin, both won Nobel Peace Prizes for. But the bottom line is that the BDS movement is claiming that Israel has no right to this land, when the fact is that they have every right to those lands. If Israel went in today, let's just say that they went in today and went in there and cleansed the Gaza Strip and took it away from the Hamas holes, they would have every right to do that. Why? Because Hamas has launched attack after attack after attack after attack from that very territory that was given to them. And the only reason why Israel doesn't do that is because it would garner enough world sympathy against them for ethnically cleansing a people group who absolutely hates them. So that's why they wouldn't do that. But there, here's something else I wanted to show you as part of this slideshow. I did a comparison of the BDS movement versus what the Nazi boycotts. Now, if you remember, let me go back here. During 1935 and 1938, you had the institution of the Nuremberg Laws, and then you had the progression of the Jews being completely dehumanized by the Nazis. So the Nazis were eventually able to go in and throw them into gas chambers and then burn them in ovens. It was a step process. So from 1935 to 1938 and 1941, the Jews lost everything. They, number one, the first thing that happened is that their citizenship is taken away. Once their citizenship was taken away, they were not allowed to work in certain areas. So the ability to work was taken away. Then their businesses were taken away. Their property was taken away. And once their property was taken away, now they have nowhere to live. So they moved them into ghettos. Now, once they got them into the ghettos, they had them corralled. Then they moved them from the ghettos to the concentration camps and eventually into the death camps where they were systematically killed. Yes, go, George. As long as they agree with me, go ahead. Because if you don't, I'm going to put you in the back. I'm going to put you backstage if you don't agree with me.
Okay, get ready.
No, go ahead.
One point I want to make here about this issue of you're right when you say it was a step-by-step process towards burning the Jews.
Right.
But I want people to understand that this was not something hatched in the mind of Adolf Hitler. It was permeating in German society from the 1800s. Discrimination against the Jews mm-hmm. was going on from the 1800s in Germany. And a matter of fact, even though they fought in the First World War for Germany, they were blamed for the loss of the First World War. People need to understand that it's not just Adolf Hitler. I want to emphasize that. It didn't just appear in the mind of one madman. He was just crystallizing the discrimination and the hate against the Jews that was permeating throughout the society. The other point, you mentioned about the West Bank and Jordan
mm-hmm.
and that Israel had defended themselves. One point you didn't mention is that Israel was actively trying to discourage Jordan from entering the war against them.
Right. Right.
And trying their best to keep Jordan out. And Jordan said, no, it was a plan between them and all the countries that support surrounded Israel. So they wanted to avoid the war. Jordan brought it on them, and they had to defend themselves. So, you know, I don't see how people cannot see these big points. The final thing I want to say is that Israel isn't going anywhere.
Exactly.
Israel now is self-sufficient in many ways. It has its own source of oil. They have a nuclear bomb. They that is not to attack anyone. It's to give them an insurance policy against anyone who tries to attack.
And I agree with all of those points, you know, especially the second one that you made about the agreement between King Abdullah and what was his name, Nasser, I can't remember. There you go. Okay, yeah. So that agreement between those two, because Nasser was trying to make himself to be the wanted to be the caliph or wanted to be the big the what?
It was the pan where unite all the Arabs.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that, and he wanted to be in charge of that. Well, he was completely embarrassed and humiliated because of what the Israelis did to his air force, which just in a matter of hours. As a matter of fact, there's recording of him calling Gorbachev, who was the Russian premier at the time, Khrushchev, calling Khrushchev and telling Khrushchev, please come save us. And Khrushchev's like, look, dude, you're the one that made it your bed. Now you're going to have to sleep in it. Good luck. But another point that I was going to – go ahead, Rod. Go ahead.
In here, let me try Nasser. Nasser and King Abdullah, or the King Abdullah was a dude from Syria. Either way, because they both failed each other and they were both lying to each other. Like, for instance, Nasser would say that, you know, his tanks were advancing when they were completely getting wiped out in the desert. And with Syria. And the Syrian guy, he's like, yes, we're advancing. When he hadn't even sent his troops over because he was waiting to see what was going to happen with what Nasser was going to do. So they were lying to each other. And then they're in a phone conversation, which was intercepted by the early NSA. And they're both like, okay, we'll just blame the Americans.
All right.
And that's how they figured it. It saved face. It's a terrible thing. But I do want to comment. I'll let you go, Eric, on your own show because I'm gracious. But I do want to comment some stuff and ask some stuff about the economic development after the first intifada, because that's actually very important in the West Bank and Gaza. That's actually a very important piece of the puzzle to this whole thing. And this is how the BDS movement actually hurts the Palestinians, because that ties in with the whole Ben and Jerry thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because, if you guys like Ben and Jerry's ice cream, tough. Find something else to satisfy your hunger pains there, your cravings there.
You know, I'm negotiating with them to be a supporter of the show, dude.
They boycott Ben and Jerry's. That's all I'm saying about that. I wanted to touch on something that.
Better.
Yeah, I agree. It is. But Benny.
Eric?
Yeah.
Eric?
Who's talking now?
Can I just show that passage of scripture that I talked about?
Yeah.
I just want to show this.
Okay, let me, oops, what am I doing here? Would you stop? Okay, Steve,
yeah.
There we go. Okay, go ahead.
It says, Gaza will lose her king, and Ashkelon will be deserted. A mongrel people will occupy Ashdod, and I will put an end to the pride of the Philistines. The forbidden food from between their teeth. Those who are left will belong to our God and become a clan in Judah. So this is Zechariah chapter 9. So anyway, I just want to show that.
No, that makes it a little more more understandable, because what he's doing here is that the people who are waging war, which would be the Philistines, equating them to the Philistines, and I will take the blood from their mouths. Oh my gosh, that is so so applicable today.
Because, you know, Gaza was originally supposed to be part of Judah when Moses went in, but they never conquered it.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, who was the tribe? There's Dan. The tribe was tribe of Dan was supposed to occupy that area, and this
because
is
the people were nuts back then too, dude. Seriously,
it's generational. I see a pattern here. You're exactly right, Red.
Gaza has always been a problem, even when it was under Israeli control in biblical times. It's always been. Dude. I mean, it's just for whatever reason. These people are crazy. They're just in the water. I think. It's like Portland, Seattle.
Yeah. It's like them Shia who smoke weed and Sunni who do meth. Yeah, I love your analogies. They're so spot on. Okay, so one other thing that I wanted to comment on George's point as far as the Nazi equivalent here going back predating World War II, and he's absolutely right, because if you look at what happened to Germany. Prior to World War I, Germany is this, and even after World War I, and you moved up into the early 30s, it's just like this cultural center in Europe. I mean, it was one of the most educated societies. And what they had done is they had made this move away from their roots, which is Christianity, and it was towards more of this secular embracing of a humanistic ideal of origins and evolution. And I know this is because I've debated this thing for over a decade when you start talking about how they the movement for evolutionary theory, where you would be able to classify, as in Darwin's second book, which was the Descent of Man, I think, or something like that. Origins of Species. It was The Descent of Man or something. I can't remember what it was. But he talks about how certain races of human beings have evolved more than other races of human beings. So this idea started to grow in German society. It was taught by a guy by the name of Ernst Haeckel. If you ever see the drawings of the embryological drawings that you find, well, you don't find them in textbooks anymore, but they were found in textbooks all the way up until the year 2000. You have these drawings of embryos, and they all go through this evolutionary cycle where they go from fish to amphibian to avian to mammal or whatever it is, and this cycle is seen in the embryos. Well, it comes to find out that he bogused up these drawings. They're not accurate at all, but the fact is that they were used in our schools, our colleges and universities for over a century. But the bottom line is that the Germans used this, and Hitler jumped on this to say, look, the Aryan race is more superior to these Jews. The Aryan race is more superior to these aboriginal races or these African races. The Aryan race is more superior to this other one. So what this does is that gives you a sense of legitimacy. So after you de-Germanize a group of people, meaning that you take away the citizenship of the Jewish people, now it makes it a heck of a lot easier to just dehumanize them. So when you go to dehumanize them, you said, well, look, they are – okay, so they're human, but they're less than human. They're not as evolved of a species, a human species, as we are. And in order to promote this Aryan race, to promote this German race, we must get rid of the weaker species. And this is when we look at it, the first thing he did was, it wasn't go after the Jews. When he started this eugenics movement, he went and cleaned out the insane asylums. All these people that were mentally incapable of taking care of themselves, people who were infirmed, he went and killed, had all those people killed first, and then he went after, started going after the Jews. So when we start looking at this progression towards killing the Jews, that's exactly what it was. It wasn't, as soon as Hitler came to power, said, all right, all you Jews, go get in the gas chamber. It wasn't like that. It was a progression. And when we look, oops, I put the wrong one up here, Steve. I'm going to remove that. It was a progression from this idea that they must first promote the Aryan race, and to protect that Aryan race, to protect the German people, they have to start getting rid of groups of people, and that's what they did with the Jews. And of course, they were blaming the Jews for the economy, the disaster economy that became or that came about in the 1920s because of all the reparations they had to pay at the end of World War I because of the Treaty of Versailles. So it was a progression towards the gas chamber. So when we look at this comparison between what the BDS movement does and says, you can look at what the Jewish when the Nazis boycotted the Jews. They said Jews are the root cause of most of the world's problems. What does BDS say? Jewish state is the root cause of most of the world's problems. They single out Jews for economic, cultural, and political academic boycott. What does the BDS movement singles out the Jewish state for economic, cultural, political, and academic boycott? And when you talk about cultural boycott, look what's happening in the Olympics today. You have athletes that are refusing to compete against Jews, against people from Israel. So that's a cultural boycott. Then you get special laws to both outlaw Jewish-owned businesses and criminals attempt anyone to do that. Here you have demand laws to outlaw Jewish-owned Israeli businesses and criminals attempt. Okay, then you have non-Jews visiting Jews and doing business with Jews vilified. So the same thing as you're having is these countries that do business with the Jewish state are vilified by the BDS movement. You're trying to shame them into boycotting them or to at least divest themselves from doing business with the Jews. The vandalization of Jewish-owned businesses, you still see that today. People you see this all across Europe. And then you even see it today in the United States, where Jewish businesses are vandalized and swastikas are painted on their businesses. You demand all shops and businesses remove Jewish-owned goods and services. Here again, in Europe, you had a movement not too long ago in France where they were going to require or create a law. I think it was France. I'm willing to be wrong on that, but it was a European, a large economy in the European Union said that they were going to require any good made, manufactured, or grown in Israel to carry a special tag on it. They were going to have to declare, hey, this good right here is made in Israel. You might not think twice about buying it. Star David Dobbed on Jewish businesses. Here it is. EU forces special labeling on goods produced by Jewish businesses in places like Jerusalem. Jewish arts performers, writers are not allowed to perform. Jewish writers, sportsmen stop from performing while books. Okay, and this, I mean, it's the same thing. You shut down the performing arts and their influence in the performing arts, and therefore you shut down that. That's a cultural thing there. First sought to transfer all Jews out of Germany to any country to take them. Currently seeks to transfer all Jews out of Israel to any country that will take them. As a matter of fact, I would like to know which Arab country would accept Jews as refugees, the right of return for the Jews? That's an interesting question. We'll talk about that here in just a second. And see, Jews control America and Britain, the world. Yeah, this is what their claims were. And nothing's changed. Nothing's changed in 90 years. Zionists control America and Britain and the world's media. Boy, that sounds all way too for this guy. You got to go, Steve? All right, brother. Thanks for coming. God bless you.
Steve, we love you.
Me too. God bless you guys.
All right. You take care, brother. Okay. So the bottom line is here. This is where you start seeing
my blood.
You see this. All of these similarities of what happened almost 100 years ago. Well, actually, 70 years ago, 80 years ago. Happening today. It's just so reminiscent of what happened in Nazi Germany. And when we think of this movement demanding the right of return of Jews, or I'm sorry, the right of return of Palestinians, their homeland, I would like to see where there's this equal demand for equal right of return of Israelis to their Arab homelands. You're never going to see that. It's always one way. The family that my wife and I, we went to Israel 3 years ago, I think it was, almost four years ago. Holy cow. That's crazy. But anyway, when we went there, the last 2 days that we were there, we did a service project for the organization that we went with. And I'm not going to mention the organization because we got trolls here. But anyway, we stayed with an Israeli family. And that Israeli family wasn't from Europe. As a matter of fact, the majority of the Jews that immigrate to Israel are not from Europe. Because we've seen people saying, oh, well, why don't we just send them back to Europe? Because that's not where they're from. The Israeli family that we stayed with. Absolutely. So they were from Morocco. So is Morocco going to allow these Jews to return to Morocco? Is Saudi going to allow those Jews to return to Saudi? Is Syria going to allow the Jews to return there? Is Jordan going to allow the Jews to return there? No. The Jews were ethnically cleansed out of these Arab countries just as soon as Israel declared their independence, and they were told, look, you have your country, now go. And these people lived out literally for years in tents before they could get an economy built and an infrastructure started and a government started. It's sick to sit there and listen to these people say, oh, we got to have a right to return. It's horse feathers, which is even stinkier. All right, Isa, go ahead.
To add to what you were saying is really true. So you have different kinds of Jewry, which is important, just like you have different kinds of Arabs. If you go to Egypt, you're going to see an Arab that you would call a black Arab, and you're going to see people that you might call white Arab. You have people, it's just diversity. You're 100% right. You have the Sephardim, which is like originally from Spain, the Mizrahi, which are from the eastern areas, like maybe Iran. You have B'nai Israel, which is Indian Jews. You have Beta Israel from Ethiopia. There's Jews of all kinds of colors, and to make it a racialized issue is really grotesque, because they're like, oh, it's a white Jew. So, you know, you're the Ashkenazi Jew, the European Jew, so you're not you're really a white person. If white people are taking over the land, that's not how it is.
Well, did you know, Issa, that did you know the majority of people on my show, Issa, are mainly white? They're just a bunch of white people on this show.
And I definitely wanted to talk about that. Well, the thing is, you know, he's making a joke, which is very knowledgeable, because there's so much diversity here.
Yeah.
You have people from Egypt, you have people from the islands, you know, like Jamaica, and you have Trinidad, you have people from all over. You have African-Americans, European-Americans, you have Palestinians, you have everybody that comes here.
No, we're mostly white. You know, come on, we're mostly white. It's got to be true.
Just to let you all know, I identify as a 20-year-old Asian lesbian. And so far, it has left me with me for days, man. You know, ain't nobody buying that, man. But, you know, I'm still open.
All right, let's, Issa, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that, but go ahead.
One last thing I wanted to tie up with, and I think it's really sad, is that there's a lot of, like, xenophobia here, because we hear there's a lot of what we call virtue signaling happening, where people are like, I believe in diversity, I believe in equity, and I believe in inclusion. But do you really believe in diversity, equity, inclusion across the board? Are you consistent with this? Do you believe that, you know, for example, do you believe people can have different kinds of faiths? Can people have different kinds of ethnicities and cultures? Can you do all of that? In this particular situation, it's completely tragic. There's people suffering on both sides. And when people say that, like what I'm saying, it's considered a heresy. If I say that Palestinians and Israelis are suffering, that is a heretical statement in today's politics. It's seen as evil and bad and wrong, and it's not. This is not apartheid, and we must make it clear, this is not apartheid. And when people keep saying apartheid and Holocaust and Nazi Germany, this is all completely wrong, and it's grotesque, and it takes away from what real apartheid is and what from real Holocaust is, mm-hmm. like what these things actually were. And all the suffering these people went through, you're denigrating that suffering, and it's atrocious. And I know a lot of people want to bandwagon and be like, we care about Palestinians. We think that they're, you know, we care about them, and we all do. We care about Palestinians. We had a Palestinian right on the show. We had Steve Masney, who's here. He's Palestinian. And so we have to...
No, I do not.
There might be a little bit.
All right, let me...
I'm sorry, yeah, I have one thing off that I want to say. I just think it's super important that we value all these lives and not just say we're going to throw people under the bus and say we don't care about this kind of community here because they happen to be Jewish. We don't do that. We love Palestinians and we love Jews, so that's it.
Well, I think that a great correlation... A great correlation of this would be as far as like the Cold War. You know, you were in the military, we were taught to hate the Russians. I mean, we really were. I mean, what are you going to do with the Russians? Well, I'm not going to tell you what we were taught to hate them, but we absolutely hated the Russians, the height of the Cold War. This is back in the early 80s. But that didn't mean that we hated the Russian people themselves. We hated their government. We hated their economic system and what it did to their people and what it was trying to do and impose upon other people in the world. Well, the same thing is true here. I do not have any animus towards Palestinian people at all. But what I do have a lot of animus towards is that government that they elected, that government that is a terrorist organization, exactly, the Hamas holes. I do have a lot of animus towards that government because what they try to do is they're trying to forcibly take from and do damage to a sovereign country, which is Israel. And they justify it through their hate, and they use their people. And this is what the sickest part about it is that they use their people as shields from the Israelis. I mean, I think Netanyahu said, look, you know, we use rockets and missiles to defend our people from the Palestinians, which we don't know how to say that. The Palestinian, right, from Hamas, right. Okay, so he says, we use rockets and missiles to defend our people from Hamas, but the Hamas uses their people to defend them from rockets and missiles. It's just the opposite of what you would think that a decent human being and somebody that would be a leader would do. and it's and to try to destroy this through the BDS movement is just unconscionable. It's an evil movement is what it is, and everybody here needs to denounce it. Go ahead, Red. Look at what forces people to do that, though. That, you know, and you know, it's tit for tat, though. I mean, it just keeps. When where does it end?
General, whatever, we're gonna need some insurance. Oh yes, please come, we got
know what I mean? No, seriously, people are people no matter what. Majority of people are, you know, no matter what, they just want to raise their families, you know, have a career, have a job, you know, have food on the table, have comforts of life, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you get these nutcases, they come in, they ruin everything, they make your life miserable. Well, you know what? And then they blame the Jews. You know what I mean? That this is Israel's fault. And so, again, this was deliberate. This was planned. These are what Fatah and Hamas and Hezbollah and all these groups do. They make the lives of their own people miserable and then blame someone else for their mistakes. Democrats make our lives miserable and then blame someone else for their mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, no, it's a standard model. I mean, the Bolsheviks did it. Well, actually, Bolsheviks were very right against the Tsar. That was horrible stuff. But anyway, but you see what I'm saying? But no matter what,
I think that's what it is.
Appreciate that, but when you start evaluating it in a holistic way, you don't ever want to see any. I mean, this is something that's innate to human beings and human decency. You don't want to ever see another human being suffering, regardless of who they are. And even when Israel is dropping those bombs on those Hamas holes that were in those concrete tunnels, and the world, you know, people are standing around celebrating that, you know, you still feel bad for those guys that are in there, because these guys have been lured into supporting that organization through an ideology that only enables and emboldens the upper ranks of that organization. It has nothing to do with the people, and has everything to do with, number one, Jew hatred, but number two, more importantly, their own
ideology.
Well, themselves to enrich themselves. Every single one of those guys is rich. You look at the amount of money that has been given to the Palestinians. It's well over $10 billion, $15 billion. I mean, the Marshall Plan. Look at what the Marshall Plan cost us, for crying out loud, to rebuild the entirety of Europe. And we, all that money goes into the Palestinians. I mean, it's crazy what they do.
The Palestinians, I mean, it's crazy what they do. Okay, their hotel was just bombed. It's a seaside Mediterranean resort, okay, and it was just bombed because they were mixing men and women. They had a concert somewhere, they were mixing men and women, okay? But no, it is a port city. It is, I mean, seriously, it could be economically prosperous. But the problem is that Hamas doesn't want it to be economically prosperous, because as soon as it becomes economically prosperous, then they no longer have a hold on power, because they can't blame the Jews for their failures, okay? Not only that, but look at these refugee camps, okay? They're not camps, they're refugee cities. The Palestinians, for some reason, I don't even know why, we actually signed off on it in the U.N., but there is no other group of people that flees a war-torn area that is given the right to return down to their grandchildren or great-grandchildren. The Palestinians are given this exception by the UN, okay? Normally, it's okay, if you're single and you can move to the country, yeah, you can come back, prepared, come back. No, what they did in the UN, they made it perpetual, okay? Not only that, so they set up these refugee camps after the Arabs told them to flee, literally, this is documented, on radio and newspaper and print,
right.
They said, flee our guns, okay, when we're not here for booty. They said that we're not here for booty, but when we're done driving Jews out, you can come back and take your land. than their concrete buildings, okay? I mean, no, these are actual cities. They developed a sewer system. They developed all kinds of stuff. So they've actually now moved from where they used to live and built the city someplace else. Now, if that would happen to any other people anywhere in the world, they'd be like, okay, well, that's where you live now. You know what I mean? Right. Okay? Not only that, but in every Arab nation, I wish Steve was here, but John could probably testify this, in every Arab nation where these refugees were taken in Lebanon was really bad. Lebanon, Jordan actually threw them out. Jordan threw the Palestinians out, okay? Or the PLL out. They actually fought a war with the PLL. Jordan, Egypt, and so on and so forth. Discriminatory laws. Okay, seriously, by law, in these countries, Palestinians cannot have certain jobs. They can't be plumbers. They can't be construction workers. They definitely can't go into the medical field. They can't go, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I know Jordan, they tried to integrate some of the population, and it just didn't work. And so they threw them out, too. So this whole idea of...
They are discriminating the menial labor. In other words, yeah, they could probably work with a plumber, a plumber tradesman, let's say. Okay? But they couldn't go up from apprentice to journeyman. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or they could work at a McDonald's, that's fine. But even if they got a medical degree, they couldn't be a doctor. To make them miserable, and then they blame the Jews.
Yeah.
Seriously, you talk to John can testify this too. I'm sure he can. Every Arab that I know, when they bring up the Palestinians, I mean, they'll be like, "We hate the Palestinians because they lost their land." Seriously, this is what I've been told multiple times. Because they lost their land, and worse, they lost their land to the Jews. But I'm like, it was your country that kind of invaded, you know? They don't get that. But let me get back to how this BDS movement actually hurts the Palestinians. And this is what it's actually designed to do. Because Ben and Jerry's is the perfect case. Ben and Jerry's bought all its ingredients. Well, not all of its ingredients, but a vast majority of its
There's
ingredients.
The echo.
Hold on, let me mute real quick and see if we can change that. Okay, let me come back. No, they're still not close, sorry. Okay, but Ben and Jerry,
Do you have your YouTube on?
No, I don't have it. Well, I have it up, but let me close that out and see if that fixes it. Okay, no. All right, well, anyway, Ben and Jerry's buys his
little... It's a bad echo, Brad.
All right, well, whatever.
I'm not hearing an echo on my end. Issa, do you hear an echo on yours?
He's going to go and come back.
I do hear it.
Did you, John? Did you hear it? Well, why don't I hear it? Well, if you guys are hearing it, why don't I hear it? That's weird. Oh, well.
That's because we're special.
Well, evidently. You guys probably got better audio equipment than I just got this, you know, Walmart brand $12 thing here. Now, let's do a thing. Let's not let Rad in for quite a while. Let's keep him in the backstage.
I was about to ask you if you had anything else to share.
All right.
The producer was coming out big time out of me.
Okay, is he echoing now? He's not echoing, is he? I got this gnat that keeps flying around here.
All
right, thanks, Piers. I appreciate that.
Because they locally manufacture, their ice cream in Israel and the West Bank and so on and so forth. And also, Ben and Jerry's, okay, there's actually an article on this because I saw my problem in 1980. We decided to buy, like, for instance, their almonds from local Palestinian growers. Okay? So they would buy as much of the local ingredient, okay, from Palestinians. Okay? All right? And let me see if I still have it up here. This is what the guy says. All right. Anyway, the point is, so now Ben and Jerry's is no longer selling the ice cream in the West Bank, okay? But they said, we're still going to sell it in Israel. Well, that doesn't go well with Israel. So now the Israelis are like, screw you, we're not buying your ice cream.
Right.
So now they're not buying the ingredients from the local Palestinian farmers. So this
oh,
is
wow. reason,
because they're not selling, you know, they're not able to manufacture, you know, the same amount of ice cream. You see how this whole BDS thing actually hurts the Palestinians, but they don't care because that's the objective. As long as the Palestinians suffer.
Well, it's exactly, and it's driven by that hatred that taught, yes, I mean, from when they're children, they're taught to hate the Jews, and anything that would hurt the Jews, regardless of how much you suffer for it, is okay, because it's hurting the Jews, or supposedly hurting the Jews.
Well, I wish Steve was still in here. No, they'll tell you flat out. Yeah, we can, well, not anymore. I mean, there's bloodshed. But no, Jews lived in Arab-controlled areas. They said that they have no problem with Jews living in their countries, but they have to be Dehemi status. They have to be a lower status. We cannot be ruled over by Jews. And they say this over and over again, and that is the main problem. That is why the Arabs around the region really hate the Palestinians, because you know they lost their land, they lost it to Jews, more importantly. And they're being ruled over by Jews. And then they totally, completely despise them. It's no joke. This is what these American reverts to Islam don't understand. When they say, we support the Palestinians. No, you don't. Because if you supported the Palestinians, you would want the Palestinians to live in peace, to do economic trade, to do business, to grow their families, grow their economy, grow their industries. So men and women can get married and raise children. Okay, look at there was a great documentary a few years ago, Life in Gaza.
Yes, yeah, yes. I appreciate that.
In Gaza, do you know, even though drug addiction, even though drug use and alcohol use is punished severely under Hamas, okay? With the short punch, alcohol abuse and drug abuse, specifically pharmaceuticals, because they can get them from the UN, because everybody's depressed in Gaza. But of course, you know, these things are abused by the young people. But no, it is seriously incredibly high, even before COVID. Okay, because they have no opportunity. Not only can they not have any opportunity, but because they can't get a job, they can't get married. They can't raise a family. So you got, and especially under Islam, when you got the multiple wives thing, you got these rich Hamas dudes that have all the money. They're buying up all the wives. They're buying up all the young women. These older men that are successful, or even if they're not so much Hamas, but they actually survive somehow. They actually were able to eke out. They were smart enough to navigate and work out of business. Okay, they got all the money so they can get the wives. And no, seriously, that is a serious problem. You got a bunch of foreign young men that can't get a wife. Where are they gonna go? They're gonna go blow themselves up. I'm serious. This is a big deal. You know, all this stuff plays out on this social, the psychological level, and it's either by design or the fruits of the design, where it's meant to make people miserable.
Yeah, and if that is what their desire is, if that's what their purpose is, they're doing a pretty good job of it. And I completely agree. If these countries would just learn to live in peace, to develop their own business, to develop their own industries, and trade willingly with the people of Israel, and leave this idea that, well, that's our land. Thing, which is completely erroneous to begin with. I mean, we could do an entire show on how erroneous that claim is to begin with. But let me just end with this so we can wrap it up for today. My question is if they are going to demand a right of return, a right of return of these people and their descendants into Israel, because this was apparently their land, which isn't true, but let's just pretend it was. How far back does this claim go? And how far do you want to push the applicability of this practice? And the reason why I say that is because if you look across the globe, there have been other countries that have conquered other countries and taken land from them also. And I am essentially pointing the finger at our own country here. the United States. How far do you want to go back? Do you want to go back to, let's say, oh, I don't know. Let's go back to 1836. 1836, there's a little revolution in the southwest portion of this country called Texas. Texas won its independence from Mexico, just took it from them, went in there and claimed it for their own and took it from them. Would somebody that would live in Texas, I don't know, in some certain city in Texas, be willing to give up all of their property because the land was taken from the Mexicans ill-begottenly? Would they be willing to do that? Would all the people in California, for example, be willing to give up all of their property and cede it back to Mexico because during the, what was the name of the treaty? Guadalupe Hidalgo was the name of the treaty at the end of the Mexican War, where Mexico was essentially forced to give up half of its country to the United States in return of their capital, Mexico City, back to them. I mean, you're talking California, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and even parts of Texas itself, all being returned. Why? Because, well, it was ill-begotten land. How far do you want to go back? Do you want to go back to the Oregon Territory? You want to give that back to England? Give it back to the indigenous peoples there?
Yeah,
that's exactly. Yeah. Go get it, Connie. Go move right into Bill Gates's backyard. It's my land, dog. Make the same claim. It's the same claim. It's the same claim. Go ahead, Issa, and we're going
to
close.
An argument I would take. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but isn't this God's land? So if God gives you the land, why are you? It's like that's a weird thing that I don't understand. Do you think that this is not, you're not taking the grace that God is giving you? Like that to me kind of blows my mind. I'm like, do you think, so like if God is doing this type of operation that's happening, do you think that you're actually oppressed, or maybe this is what God wants you to go through at this moment in time, and you know, you go through that kind of experience and you can be, you know, you trust God's grace that you're going to get through this situation. I'm just sort of theologically speaking, wouldn't you say that this is God's land and it's not your land, and you are basically kind of a custodian of the land that you're on?
Well, that's,
and it really all belongs to God. I don't know. That's kind of what.
That's the point that I brought up when I did that one slideshow on why Israel has a legitimate claim to the land. But if you also, it's insane. If you go to the Quran chapter, what is it, chapter 2, verse 40, O children of Israel, remember my favor wherein I favored you and fulfill you in my part covenant. I should fulfill my part in covenant and fear me. Chapter 5, 20 through 21, O my people, go into the holy land which Allah hath ordained for you. So even in their own scripture, they have a right to the land. Those are details that we need to focus on.
Here's kind of thing. Let me just add this. And I'm going to go off on a different tangent here, but hopefully you can see the message of my madness. Okay. I was, until just recently, well, I still got to get back into it, involved in the anti-abortion stuff around my neighborhood. Okay. Well, not around my neighborhood, but in my area. Okay. And one of the arguments, okay, that these abortionists say is, what about rape? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Each and every one of us in this panel, each and every one of us, okay, in the world, if you trace your genetic DNA material back far enough, guess what? You're a child of rape. In every sense of the word. Okay, that it would be defined as of today, and even back then. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to argue that abortion is acceptable in the time of rape, then put a gun in your head and pull the trigger. Because that means your genetic line, your unique material, should not have existed. Okay? Now, here's the thing. Okay? With this thing, and this relates to what Jesus said, this is God's land. God gives you land, either through blessing you with the conquest, of the native people, okay, all right, but either way, once the conquest is over, once the battle is won, okay, or lost, tell you what, you still got to work together,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you can develop a nation and a people, and then if you look at the Hebrew Bible, that's what it's talking about, except for some people, like the Jebusites, the Hittites, and so that they would be immediately destroyed, but no, for the most part, okay, other than certain groups of people, homogenous thing. It was to work together. Okay? Do you see what I'm saying? To develop the land, to develop an economy, to develop a society, a just society, a righteous society, okay, under one God. Okay, do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't sit there and say, well, you know what? You know, my great 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 ancestor was conquered by your great 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 ancestor, so therefore I have the right to kill you and take your home. No. Don't make any sense.
Right. How far back do you want to go? I mean, that's exactly right. You know, I could make the same claim against the Ottomans attacking my ancestors in Bavaria during the Siege of Vienna. I look at them. They attacked my people. I have a right. No, you don't. I mean, it's insane. And that's a topic for another day. Okay, guys, we're going to cut it off right there again. You guys are still here. Thank you for coming. Sunday. I haven't decided what we're going to do on Sunday, so if you have any ideas, start shooting me some emails or some messages via Instant Messenger, Skype, or email, and we'll start looking in that direction. If you have not subscribed to the channel, go subscribe to the channel, hit like on the video. Yes, smash that like button. I'd like to blame the Germans nowadays for World War II. There you go. Exactly right.
Hey, Darcy. Darcy's awesome.
Yeah.
She's recovered. She is fully recovered.
Amen. Yeah. She's all over Facebook too.
One of my favorite.
All right. Hey, look at here. I got a Kufar Akbar from Rob. Thank you, Rob. We appreciate the Kufar Akbar. You know, who makes that? That doesn't matter. Okay, thank you for coming, and we will see you next time on Radio Free Kafir Stan. God bless y'all. Okay, hold on. All right. Yeah, no, Issa's still here. Okay, let me go ahead and cut the broadcast over here on Blog Talk Radio. See you guys. Thanks.